I'll give you an angina, making more dough than director Rob Reiner. If you heckle me, I'll give your ass a shiner, then diss you with a dope ass one liner.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Welcome to the show. Last Exit to Brooklyn, Historic Media Podcast Networks. We have a couple of guests who are also on the same network as us from the Mangina Dialogues. Nick Scopes. Yeah, let's hear it. And Greg Alprin. I was waiting for applause, but I forgot we're not. How are you guys doing? We were on your podcast a couple of months ago. And now,
yeah, it was awesome.
Now we got you guys to be on this.
Payback's a bitch.
I know. And now we're all on the same network. We're all best friends. This is great.
I know. It's kind of like, you know, like when you see those stars from the different TV shows all hang out or do a promo together.
Yeah. Is it like that, Tom?
Battle the network stars.
Yeah. Remember you'd see that like back in the day, they would make them all kind of hang out and you'd think that like the cast of Different Strokes and Facts of Life were just like best friends.
Yeah. Melrose Place in Beverly Hills 90210 hanging around.
Yeah.
Johnny Rockets.
I did a show once on True TV, this awful show, and Todd Bridges was on it and Tanya Harding and all these like B-list celebrities. And
it's generous calling them B-list.
Yeah. I know. F-list. They weren't even on the list.
There wasn't a list.
But they were like, people would see me and be like, oh, so you like hang out with them? And I was like, no, I've never seen any of them ever. Never in person. So
were they in New York?
I think they were in LA, and it was one of those shows where it was like a talking head show, and you would just tape by yourself. And it was an awful show, but it was just funny looking back, because if you told me when I was a kid, like, oh, you're going to be on a show with Todd Bridges one day, I would have thought I was like a millionaire and like had made it to the top of showbiz.
Are you going to tell us the name of this TV show, or you're not going to tell us?
Well, it started out called Smoking Gun Presents, and then they changed it to World's Dumbest. And it would be like World's Dumbest like Criminals, World's Dumbest Partiers. And it would just, the theme of it was they had these people who had gotten, like celebrities who were known for being shit shows, and they would be on it. And then they'd kind of have comedians on it to be actually funny, because Tanya Harding was just kind of a train wreck.
Yeah.
So yeah,
that's pretty funny.
That was a pretty long. So how are you guys? So how long have you guys been on Historic Media podcast networks now?
Since,
I don't know. When did it start, Greg?
June. We came on the first week of June.
And how did that happen? Were you guys? Did they approach you?
We're just crazy talented, and they were like,
yeah.
They heard we had you guys on. They were like, we really got to step up our talent.
That's
game.
Definitely true, actually.
You had some good guests on your show.
Just kidding. No, you know, it's actually, thanks to the publicist of theirs, after we had you guys on, I just, you know, started talking to her, and she was talking to me about the network and said I should talk to Kristen, and we kind of just had a couple conversations, and it just seemed like a good marriage for now.
Nice.
We're married? You didn't tell me that shit.
Well, we're divorced. But.
Well, I like that you didn't make it perfect, you know, for now. That's what all marriages should be.
Just, well, right. I mean, 50% in the divorce.
Yeah, that should be in the vows.
They
for
would
now.
Go for sure better. All of them would go better if there was just a for now.
No, they're great. They're you know, you guys know they're
oh yeah,
they're really great people, and you know, it's cool to be in something that is from the start. And
yes, you know,
yeah, that's sort of what I liked. I liked that it was new. You know, they obviously have a good pedigree on where they come from. You know, and that's kind of exciting to be with people that are, you know, working towards something. You know,
we're in a big legal battle with them, right? They owe us millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, we're trying to get on top of that money, so.
Damn, dude. You didn't get our contract. That's what we get paid. What did we get, Greg? Like $500,000 a year, a piece of salary?
Wow.
We got stock in Last Exit to Brooklyn.
Okay. And, that wasn't a good move.
No. And four cheesesteaks.
Did you guys buy in at zero?
We bought at -360.
I hope you're shorting that stock.
Yeah, we shorted it hard.
Yeah, because you know, you always watch those like bios about like a band, and then they, you know, they blow up, and then the band's like, oh yeah, and then they paid us nothing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I always think it's funny that that's the route that they always go, the record company. They're like, yeah, we're going to give you nothing. It's just kind of like, just like with the Beastie Boys, they basically said when License to Ill blew up, it sold like 10 million copies. They gave them no royalties. Yeah. And so, of course, there was this contentious, but it's like, why not just give them like $1 million?
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And just, why is it always nothing?
It really is. It's like, so we could give you a little, but we're going to give you nothing. And we're going to watch. We're going to see what happens. And,
right. Just, we're going to make, like, I was on a, before the True TV show, they paid me, but I was on a VH1 show and they called me and they were like, hey, we want you to be on this show. And I was like, oh, wow, this is so great. And they were like, yeah, we don't pay anything. And I was like, oh, and I fucking still did it.
Yeah.
That's how bad it was.
So technically, it's not a job. It was a favor.
But it's just
so,
like,
so we all have low self-esteem and we'll work for anything.
And also, there's just like 1,000 people behind you that'll do it. So, yeah.
And I think nobody questions nothing. You know, when you get some money, you feel like you're underpaid. When you get nothing, you're like, oh, I guess that's what you get paid. Nothing.
But that's what I was thinking. Like, why nothing? Why couldn't they, in the meeting, couldn't they have just been like, just give them like $100? So it's so they have some integrity with, or they have some dignity with it. Mm-hmm. I just think that's so funny that that's the template in a lot, you know, in showbiz. It's just like, yeah, just don't give them, just give them nothing. So, and then they always get, they're always like, well, why are you suing us? And it's like, because you like treated us like complete dirt the entire time. So, yeah.
The Goo Goo Dolls story.
Oh, really?
Oh, what's their story?
No, that's the exact story. They,
for real?
Yeah. They signed.
I just assumed since they had like all those radio hits that they would be just huge commercial successes. Like,
no, it's legit their story. They like signed away all their rights for like their first three records that were their biggest records, and had to go sue the record companies, and then, you know, had nothing and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, what is that? I mean, that's got to be such a... I was watching like that Straight Outta Compton movie, and there's a part where Ice Cube goes solo, and he's like, the guy's like, the manager or the record guy is like, yeah, well, I can't pay you for the first one, but if it's a hit, then the second one I'll pay you. And he's like, all right. And then the second one is a hit, and he's like, yeah, I still can't pay you.
You know, there's something about that that's obviously criminal, but... like ballsy for someone to be like, I'm gonna do all this and I'm not gonna pay you anything after the fact, and what are you gonna do about it? It's like so gangster.
Yeah, there is, yeah, something really gangster,
really wild.
Have you guys ever experienced anything like that with like a contract where in showbiz where they were like, where they ripped you off? I mean, I'm sure you have. I have.
Greg probably has.
No, you know, it's funny. I'm very... I mean, I do a lot of contracts, and I'm the least litigious person in the world. Like, I'm very against how everyone's, you know, I'm going to sue you for this, I'm going to sue you for that. It's really what sucks about this world, and, you know, as far as the legal system goes for me. So I'm very conscious of every contract that I look at and sign to make sure that I'm not signing something that I either can't stand behind myself or don't feel good about signing, knowing that there's some ambiguity somewhere in that agreement. Like, so anything I've ever signed, I've been very comfortable with, and have not luckily gotten screwed.
And you're able to go
I
through
take
a contract
back,
and understand
I,
it?
I did get screwed one time, actually. And then used that.
That was our private time.
Right. That was me and Nick, that we met in the gym locker room.
That was when you were in the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah, but I used that, like, that experience to make sure that never happened again. And it never has.
Yeah, because I signed a contract for, like, I made a movie and these guys distributed it and they gave me a shitty contract. It was actually, it was right before I went to law school. I was kind of like, you know, I think I'm going to go to law school. This is an interesting move.
After that, you're like, I'm going to go to school for 3 years and read for 3 years
straight. Yeah, I kind of have to make a lot of weird choices like that. It wasn't just because of that, but... I'm trying to, like, because what they do is they make it so confusing so that you just have no idea how to, like, what's going on. And then they kind of scare you, you know. They're like I remember their lawyer specifically being like, you know, kind of like strong arming me, like being like on the phone, like, well, I mean, are you going to sign the contract? I mean, or should we just go find another movie? You know? And I was like, okay, you know, and I have no one interested, so I'm kind of like, yeah, I guess I'll give you my movie for nothing, or a really confusing contract.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah,
it's a.
You say you have a lot of contracts you worked on?
Yeah, contracts, agreements, all kinds of stuff.
I'm curious, like what kind of stuff specifically?
Well, for a while I was producing and developing TV and some film. So nice. I was in contracts with production companies, studios, actors, producers, directors, the whole nine yards. So, and I was doing most of those myself. I had an entertainment attorney, but I knew what I needed to do. I went to someone when I needed to, and then basically had templates and just, it was plug and play after a while. And then the only one that was confusing was this agreement with Sony, but it ultimately turned out fine. But then my main business, I do marketing consumer products for all the entertainment companies and studios. So I should be a lawyer for how many contracts I deal with.
Yeah.
From the entertainment company. So it's kind of second hat to me now.
Yeah, that's good.
Greg's like a real adult.
Yeah.
Dude, he's an integral part to the podcast and the comedy club we have here in Connecticut that we book, because it's Greg and then me and then two other idiots. And we're like, you know, we'll be like, yeah, let's just start doing this and do that. And Greg's like, wait a minute. This, you need that, you also need insurance, you need, and we're like, oh you really? It's just like, do whatever you want. So he's always the voice of reason.
So it's Greg and three idiots.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a good name of the company. That's a good name for a band. What's the name of the
comedy club again? The club is called
The Basement.
Yeah.
The Basement in South Norwalk, Connecticut.
It's in
we're up top.
It's in an attic.
COVID.
are you guys doing shows there again?
Tomorrow night is our first one.
Really?
Since when? March
13th. 6th? No, March 13th.
March 13th?
Last show we did was Friday the 13th. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So how are you guys doing that? I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of like obvious like changes or whatever. Like how are you guys trying to do
it? Very carefully.
Yeah.
You know, the Connecticut, luckily, is in pretty good shape and has been. So they're the only things not open right now in Connecticut are straight bars that don't serve food, so just straight drinking alcohol bars.
Oh.
And
I thought you meant not gay
bars. Gay bars
are open. Like, gay bars are wide open.
And I was like, wow, I didn't know. Yeah,
no pun intended.
Well, gay bars kind of have, they're kind of at an advantage because like glory hole sex is kind of, you know, it's old hat to them.
totally socially distanced. Totally.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, you know, the club, you know, our club was actually in a basement, right? So we can't use the basement. Yeah, basement of a two-level bar. So now they're taking the club upstairs for obvious reasons because, you know, the basement isn't conducive to social distancing. It's not, ceilings aren't high enough. So we're moving upstairs and it's pretty unique. There's a raised DJ booth, which is, I think, where the comedians are going to go. And then it's just tables. So it holds right now about 55 people.
Have you done any, have you
how many done does any it comedy? Usually hold? Sorry.
No, sorry. I was just going to say, have you done any comedy? Like, not that show, but like, have you done any comedy since this whole thing?
We also were running an open mic night last year we started, and then me and Nick, when we took over this comedy club in October, sort of divested ourselves of that, of running that open mic night. And it's at a friend's bar restaurant here in town. And he asked me if I wanted to get it going again about a month ago, because they're allowed to do some stuff with limited people inside and with entertainment. So we started doing the open mic about a month ago, actually. So Nick has done 4 weeks worth of rough stand up.
What was it like? Horrible
set.
I did a set last night.
Understand, like,
go ahead.
What were you saying?
I was just gonna say I did a show last night, the first one I've done in New York City since
March.
Yeah, Tom, where'd you do it?
The Apollo? No, yeah. It was,
sold out, four shows, no big deal.
Yeah, it was opening for Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart. Okay.
No, it was it was at this place, Three Monkeys, and it's kind of like,
oh yeah,
it's a bar, and upstairs they had like, it's kind of enclosed, but it's still outside. It was okay. I mean, I've done stand up like since this has all started, but not in New York City. Like, I actually did some in like Minneapolis, but it's weird. Like, even if you just don't do stand up for like 2 or 3 weeks, it's like, you know, I feel like stand up's one of the easiest things to get bad at fast.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
Yeah. I had to watch, today I was watching my old set to remember shit for tomorrow. Cause I was like, what did I used to say? Like, what was this joke again? Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting after 4 months. I mean, like, I've been doing, like I said, I've been doing sets at the bar we have, the open mic, but you know, this will be like an actual crowd and like people and a little bit more pressure. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm excited though that it's finally back.
You know, plus the open mic, it's just comedians doing comedy for other comedians who don't really give a shit about you and are kind of hoping you do bad. So that, you know, there's no encouragement from 20 right. other open micers. You know?
Right. Not so very generous laughers.
Yeah, no, for
but
sure.
But when you do get that laugh or the pop, like, it's so satisfying because you know they don't want to laugh. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yeah, it's weird. I did it last night. It wasn't that great. And I'm like, what was I missing about this? It's kind of like getting back with like an old girlfriend. You're like, yeah. Oh, yeah, this was shitty.
That's exactly how I would describe the experience.
Have you seen the shows that they've
literally
been
perfect?
Have you seen the ones they've been doing in the park that Stand Up New York's been doing in Central Park?
No, I've seen the promos. Have you been on them? Or
no,
have you seen
I haven't.
Them?
I haven't, but we've had a bunch of friends who have done those shows, and it just looks like that there's one person standing in the front of a, you know, just in the lawn screaming at people on picnic blankets.
That's what it looks like.
I'm like, how is that even working? Like,
it's just like, it's such a weird thing to explain, especially to, I think, of course, other comedians and comedy club owners and even waitresses and bartenders, they all get it. But if you try to like explain why you can't do comedy in a park to like just a normal person who doesn't like live in the comedy world, they never understand it. And it's also, I have trouble explaining what it is. But it's just like comedy is not nice. This is the best I got. It's like you can't have like a nice yard and like nice things and then some guy, you know, just yelling about something like awful, or like a girl talking about her pussy and like, you know, that's right. kind of
in a garden.
In a garden, you know, like and like there's
chirping. Never yell about your pussy in a garden.
And the birds are chirping. It's just like you need it to be kind of a gross, or at least not even. It doesn't have to be gross, but at least like dark.
Yeah.
And the audience needs to not really be able to see each other. And honestly, it's all smoke and mirrors and bullshit anyway. I mean, I guess comedy could work outside at night. But I don't think a lot of people are doing that because lighting setups are like.
Yeah. I just didn't understand why someone didn't bring a battery powered amplifier with a mic. Like, it's not that difficult. You go into the subway and there's 100 guys playing the guitar through an amplifier.
No, you know what it is? Apparently, you need a license for
that. That's exactly
what it is.
Yeah.
You can go around Central Park and just do anything. But once you have a mic and stuff, it's like a performance. Then you got to get a permit. Mm-hmm.
So when I heard that, I've done stand up without a mic with like maybe 20 times, and I'm like, this isn't stand up. I don't know what this is not me being. I feel like it's just not me performing because I need a mic. I always get so self conscious that no one can hear me. So you know what I mean. And I've done stand up outside with a mic and an amplifier and still just feel like no one. And if you're thinking the whole time like, is anyone hearing this? It just really ruins your timing.
For sure.
So even last night, it was a smaller area, but it was kind of outside. I felt like no one could hear me. And I feel like I'm like a pretty subtle, you know, my delivery is pretty subtle. So it's kind of like once I make it a little bigger, it's just I'm not me
anymore.
Kind
of ruins it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it is probably a
good exercise. Have you guys been doing...
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, have you guys been doing Zoom shows?
Yeah, I do.
Only a few. These two have been doing a ton.
I like them.
How is that?
I kind of prefer them to stand up.
That's crazy. I'm sorry. That's so crazy.
I know. Well, I'm crazy.
Wild. Why is that?
Well, like, I think it's good.
People laughing. Like, what's like the?
Well, I'll tell you. This is why. All right. So, I've only done like five, and they've all been pretty good. But I think what it is that I like that I'm just at home. It makes me less nervous. Mm-hmm. I get very nervous doing stand-up. I also like that, like, it's not like no one's doing great. So it's not like a thing of like, wow, that guy killed and now I'm going to go on and bomb. It's kind of like, yeah, everyone kind of did bad. So, and if you do like pretty good, it's like you've done amazing. You know what I mean? If you can hear, like one time I did it and I could hear like three people laughing because everyone else was muted. And that was, I feel like that's kind of when I'm at my best. Like, I feel like I'm at my best and funniest.
When the audience is muted?
Well, when I started, some guy, I had a hat on, like a Texas Rangers hat. He was like, Texas Rangers. And I just muted him. And I was like, wow, this is so much easier to deal with people when I want them to shut up. turn that guy off. But also I just feel more comfortable doing it. It's like no pressure. When you're done, you don't have to like take the subway home and think about how badly you did, or you're just like right next to your bed and you can turn your computer off.
Can I say a few things? So I miss
sounds like stand-up caused you a lot of emotional damage.
For sure. I miss, you don't miss, you know, hanging out at comedy clubs with comics and doing a show and then hanging out with them. Like that's a huge,
that's a big part
in
of
my
it.
Life right now that, you know, for 4 months, I haven't seen a lot of my friends and
I miss that. I mean, do you guys miss that? I mean,
I do.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you though. I always get so nervous before shows. Like, you could ask Greg. He even like will look over at me like before I go on. He's like, "Are you all right, man? What's the matter with you?" Like, I'm a complete nervous wreck. But I mean, once after it's over, yeah, I love to hang out for a little bit. You know, especially if everyone does well on the show, like it's a great time. You know, we do the bar. It's a good thing. I miss it. I can't wait for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I miss that part of it. And I don't know. I think the hardest part of stand up is just that 5 to 10 minutes before you start for me. That's like the worst.
It's exciting though. I mean, it, there's a reason you get nervous. Like, sure, I get nervous because I care, you know, like that's a good thing.
Yeah. But I get nervous even shows I don't care about, you know.
Well, that seems damaging. That seems like that's not good for you. That's unhealthy.
I think some people, I'm one of those people. I have stage fright. I'm always kind of like, oh fuck, because you know you're going up and people are going to judge you, and you know it.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
You're going for a specific reaction, and I thought I would.
I got a question.
What?
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I got a question for you guys. So when you have like say friends coming to see you or like family or whatever, that make you more nervous, or do you just not? You're like, it's the same.
It totally depends on who it is. Like if it's family that has seen me already a bunch, then absolutely not at all nervous, nothing. But if it's like a friend from college that has never seen me do stand up, that actually makes me more nervous than like 100 random strangers.
Yeah, you want to do well.
Yeah, because it's a huge thing. It's like, oh, they've been seeing on social media that you've been doing stand up for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, whatever it is, and they've never seen you. And then if your first set, you just bomb your ass off, like that's embarrassing.
And they're like, oh, good luck with that.
I had a friend from
college who surprised me at a show.
Oh, that's terrible.
And he watched me, and guess what? He heckled me the whole time.
Did he know what he was doing? What a
no! He thought he was helping me out.
Daryl?
Were you guys good friends?
Not really. He just saw it. That's why sometimes I don't put stuff up on Facebook, because I don't want crap like that to happen.
But Eric, that could have been. I feel like that would have been great opportunity for like real life crowd work. Like, I don't know if the crowd would have known you weren't in on it, because you could have just been like, inside. His name is, like Daryl or whatever. Like, that would have got a lot of laughs if you were just like getting mad at him.
Yeah, but it wasn't that kind of crowd. It wasn't that kind of heckle. It was the heckle where he's just being really loud after every joke.
loud, like okay. laughing or yelling.
Yeah, like laughing weirdly, you know, where you can't.
I
really
hate that.
Yeah.
I hate when people laugh and then they repeat the punchline and then they tell the other person next to them like what's funny about what the guy just said. I just
yelling out like bad memories from college to you. Like, who threw up on that girl?
Yeah, that's remember what I was when everyone say. Saw your penis and they said it was small? Remember that?
I once was doing a show and I was bombing, believe it or not. And
oh, wow. Was someone, I don't believe it.
There was a woman in the front row. Every time I told a joke, she was whispering to the person next to her. And I go, well, why are you talking after every joke? And she goes, I'm translating. They don't speak English. I'm translating the jokes. And I was like, oh, great. I'm bombing in two languages.
That had to have hit.
Yeah, a little bit. It was basically like I would tell a joke and then she would tell the joke and the person who didn't speak English would be like, oh, yeah, I don't think that's funny either. can I ask you? All right, so we were on your podcast. So when did you start? Yeah, the Mangina Dialogues.
July 7th, 2019.
Yeah, last July. Oh,
wow. And how did you come up with that name for it?
Yes, yes.
I've always been curious.
Greg.
So, I mean, I honestly, the truth is, it just came to me in the shower. I'm not even joking. I probably wasn't there.
I was gonna say, wow. So it was a collaborative thing
in the shower.
In the shower, and I was watching. I mean, I've watched Step Brothers. That's 100 times.
And he tucked it back,
I was just thinking. You know, me and Nick had talked about doing a podcast, and this is prior to even getting serious. And then I'm in the shower. And it just came to me. And I'm like, Mangina Dialogues. And I was like,
oh, right. He says that whole thing where he goes, he has a mangina.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's a scene where he's in the talent contest and his brother, you know, Brendan has a mangina.
Right, right.
Wait, I haven't
seen it. And then Greg ran out of the shower, ran to his front yard, so he can get naked.
Yeah.
So, Nick, when you heard that name, were you like, yeah, immediately, were you on board or did you?
I, you know what? I didn't remember my reaction. I think I was like, I was just okay, you know what? That's fucking funny. Who cares? Like, we'll see where this goes.
Because it is very hard to name something.
Yeah, the original name for this podcast was the Joe Rogan Experience.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that it is funny you say that.
Out a lot of money from Spotify.
That it is hard to find a name that doesn't exist, and that's really. What sealed it for me is because I spend my life in intellectual property, right? So I know how hard it is to come up with something that doesn't exist. And when you find something that does, that always helps you stand out, right?
When you say you spend your life in intellectual property, do you mean like with your like producing and stuff?
No, my main job in consumer products. And
right. Okay.
So, but I've done, you know, I've branched out into lots of different things. So I advise on consumer products and intellectual property and celebrity and lots of stuff. So I'm in intellectual property all day.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then when I went on and I was like searching Mangina Dialogue, like nothing existed. And I'm like, this is the name. Like this is the name, you know, because there is nothing else out there. Nothing.
Well, it's play on words or a spoof with that the whole vagina dialogue.
Vagina monologues, right. Yeah, for
monologues,
sure, of course.
I said dialogues, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. You got me.
That's what it was. It's a marriage of those two things.
Right.
The only time I regret this name is when I have to, like, we have to email or DM people and be like, hi, I'm from this podcast, right. Mangina Dialogues. Like,
yeah, the MGD.
Like, I promise, we're a serious podcast. We've had good guests. We're not just two weirdos. We promise. I know the name's weird, but...
Yeah, have there been times where people have told you, like, oh, well, what do you talk about? Like, because you don't specifically, like... It's not like a podcast where you're like, oh, yeah, we're going to talk about, you know... Because what is mangina, really? Isn't that kind of like a term? Wasn't it kind of like a term when they're kind of like, oh, you're like a pussy or something, right?
No.
Yeah,
no.
But a mangina is...
A mangina
Alex has a clear definition.
Yes. I don't know about you guys. We could ask the experts on mangina here. They're with us now. But the mangina is when a man tucks his penis and balls back and makes a man vagina, yeah. makes a vagina, right. but he's a man.
Silence of the Lambs. Didn't you ever see Silence of the Lambs?
I totally remember. Yeah, yeah, of course.
Don't pretend like you don't know what he's talking about.
My first manginas were at football camp in high school. They were all over the place. Tell you what.
Yeah. Wow.
Literally, my starting quarterback and wide receiver like woke me up. And they're like, turn on the light. And they were on top of their bed, naked, with their dicks between their legs.
That is
screaming mangina. That was my first experience.
Wow.
Did you ever find that funny?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Eric is turned off by this.
Our coach, and our best part was our coach saw, came in, freaked out, made us do up downs, basically like burpees, in our underwear in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m. And I was so mad.
And by underwear, he means his mangina.
Right.
Oh, so you did it.
Literally, my boxers. The worst. What?
Oh, you did it. You actually did it.
Yeah, I didn't do it. I haven't done it recently, you know. Yeah. But
he's talking about when he was a boy at high school football.
In our cabin.
Yeah.
We actually have only had two people ever turn it down that I know of because of the name.
Okay. Okay. Say their names or no?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Caitlyn Jenner.
Jim Gaffigan.
Jim Gaffigan. He turned it down because of the name?
Yeah. And
really?
I get it. I get it.
I see that.
I understand. I get it from him. Funny story, though. His wife said she would do it if he didn't do it.
She's cool, actually.
Yeah, totally. And then Pussy Jeremy Piven.
Pussy Jeremy Piven.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know him, or was it? Did you see him at a show or something, or how?
We had a publicist back in the late part of 19, and. She was just reaching out to people, and she was friends of Jeremy's, and basically sent me his note directly, like saying, "I'm not going on that fucking show with that name." Like,
was this before or after he
after that's
raped
after.
Everyone?
Yeah, definitely after.
I've heard. I mean, listen, he's a star. That's fine, whatever. But all of our experiences of talking to everybody and the guests we've had on, no one seems to have had a good experience with that.
Yeah, I've heard that about, you know, it's funny. I waited tables back in like 96 and I waited on him, and he wasn't like, he at that point, recognizing him was like a big deal. And I'm sure it was to him. Cause he had been in like, and I'm kind of one of the, I remember really weird pop culture things. Like, I can tell you actors' names and weird movies. And I, like, he had been in the movie Judgment Night. What?
Judgment Night, yeah.
Do you remember Judgment Night with Emilio Estevez?
Yep. That movie's great. Awesome soundtrack to that movie, too.
What? I've never heard of that movie. That sounds
terrible. Came out in 90.
Yeah, neither have I. I want to watch it.
The soundtrack, actually, it was a big push for the soundtrack. Like, that, I actually did buy the soundtrack because it's a lot of, like, isn't the soundtrack like a lot of hip hop groups mashed up with other non hip hop groups?
Actually one of the, maybe not the first, but very early hip hop heavy metal combined bands. So it was
Who are the bands that they mashed up?
One of them is
Biohazard.
Yeah.
Who else?
There's one with like Teenage Fan Club and like De La Soul or something.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great soundtrack. The movie's fantastic, like awesome.
Do you really like them? I mean, I like that movie, but I feel like it's not thought of as like a great movie. It's a very like simple. You know who's in it? Dennis Leary is the main heavy bad guy.
Yeah,
yeah. He was doing that a lot in the 90s. He was playing those roles.
And it's about, I mean, I remember it's a very simple plot. It's been done over and over. It's basically these four white guys, actually Cuba Gooding Jr. is in it. So it's, but it's sort of for like wimpy guys, and they're driving in this like big
Winnebago.
And it breaks down in a bad neighborhood, and they see like a gang murder someone. Yeah. And then the gang is like, Dennis Leary's the leader of the gang.
Oh yeah.
And
I saw this
like,
movie.
We have to like kill them.
Stephen Dorff is in it too.
Stephen Dorff, it's a powerhouse cast.
You know, it's another. Going back to fucked up good movies that Jeremy Piven was in, besides PCU, like, Very Bad Things.
Now, that's an interesting... I was just thinking about that movie the other day, because it's a weird movie. Did you that movie?
I love that movie.
Do you really? Go ahead. What?
You know who was supposed to be in that movie?
No.
Adam Sandler.
No way.
And he turned it down for The Waterboy.
Good movie.
Because the movie was kind of a bomb.
I just watched Very Bad Things like about 4 months ago because it was on really late at night. And I was like, you know, I've never seen this. I'm going to watch it. I really didn't like it. I thought it, like, the tone of it, like, didn't, because it's supposed to be a comedy, but it's kind of like, it's kind of too dark, I thought.
Oh, it's such a dark ass comedy. Like, it's such a comedy of fucking errors that, like, and it's so twisted. Like, everything about that movie starts out, you're like, okay, this is kind of cool. And then it just goes off the rails in twisted ways.
Yeah. Really bad. Like, they start, like, killing each other, right?
Yeah. And I know the end is super dark, too.
Oh, super dark. I mean. Yeah.
Doesn't it end where he, like, has no limbs or something?
Yes. Yes. Like, it ends
John Favreau.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I hope my comedy career ends.
I love that movie. Then they pinned they killed the stripper on the towel rack in the bathroom.
When I met Jeremy Piven, I was like, hey man, like, you're Jeremy Piven, right? And he almost looked like shocked. He was like, he was like, yeah, man, yeah, yeah. I remember he talked really weird, and I was like, yeah, you were in, like, Judgment Night. And, like, that's kind of all. And I knew him. You know what else I knew he was in? And I'm sure he was like, he's in One Crazy Summer? Because he was, like, John Cusack's best friend growing up. So he's in all, early on, he's in a lot of John Cusack movies as, like, a nothing part.
He was supposed to be in High Fidelity, too.
Yeah, there was a time where John Cusack was basically like, if I'm in the movie, this guy has to be in the movie too.
That was they had a falling out because he was supposed to be the Jack Black part in High Fidelity, and that was the movie that made Jack Black a star. So I guess he was kind of bitter about it for a while.
But I think they made the right move on that.
But Piven was also, I mean, he was on TV for a while with the Ellen Show. Early 90s when he was on Ellen, and then he was on Larry Sanders.
Oh, right.
He was right. So I remember when he was on the Ellen show, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was on TV for a long time.
He was like, just bopping around and things, but I think it took him till Entourage to be, like, a star.
And he totally, I feel like his hair transplant made his career, because... first of all, he plays in Seinfeld when they do the episode where they're doing the pilot based on Seinfeld.
Right.
He plays George.
Yep.
So he's like really, he's almost completely bald at that point. And that was in like 93. And then in Entourage, he has his full head of hair. And like, it's arguable that he couldn't have played Ari Gold without that hair transfer. You know what I mean? He couldn't have done that bald. You know what I mean? Did you know, like, are you aware that he had a hair transplant?
I don't, I mean, it's...
We're really getting into the important things here.
It's pretty, I mean, it's obvious that something, because even, like, if you think back to, I mean, I just started watching all the Larry Sanders shows again because of HBO Max, and he's bald. I mean, he's basically, like, huge, you know, I mean...
Yeah.
You usually don't get more hair when you're older.
Right. So once that happens, it's kind of like it happens. And then, yeah, he's got hair.
it's kind of like, it's almost like watching like a shy girl get breast implants or something, how it completely alters who they are. Because you can see him in Larry. Because did she get breast implants?
I don't know. I'm not saying.
I have some inside info. Did she get a hair transplant on her
chest? Yeah, look at pictures from Taylor Swift now, and then I don't know.
Oh, really?
Years ago, yeah.
But like, because the parts he was playing before the hair transplant are the very kind of like schlubby, like he's playing George basically, you know. And then when all of a sudden he's Ari Gold, he's like the really super confident alpha. It kind of turned him to like an alpha guy. And okay. Go ahead, sir. I was just going to say, so then I, going back to Judgment Night a little bit. So then I remember, like, when he became really big, Jeremy Piven, I read some news article where him and Stephen Dorff got into a fight at a bathroom entrance at like a club years after Judgment Night.
Yeah, I think that was in New York, actually.
Yeah.
I remember something like that.
And it was like they were quoted, like people were quoting them as saying things like Stephen Dorff said, like, you're not even in movies. Like, you're on TV. Like, I'm in movies. It's just so funny to, like, hear this, like, the, you know, like, two Hollywood actors fighting and, like, what they would fight about, that would be a thing that they would throw out at each other. But it seems like that's what it all comes down to is, like, and the fact that Stephen Dorff was considered himself kind of like a movie star was also kind of funny to me.
He lost out on the role in Titanic to Leo.
Stephen Dorff?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and another thing about Judgment Night, so when it came out, Stephen Dorff wasn't really big. He was kind of an up-and-coming, hot, like, new star guy. And I remember he did this, like, interview in, like, Movie Line or something where he shits on everyone in Hollywood because he was really cocky. And Judgment Night was coming out, and he was like, yeah, Judgment Night is shit. I only did it 'cause for the money. Which I was like, oh, okay. So, like, even the guy in the movie hated the movie. Do you remember that there was, like, a time where Stephen Dorff was kind of, like, they were trying to make him, like, he was going to be the next kind of, like, Johnny Depp, you know?
I think he was going to be the next Ethan Hawke. they seem interchangeable to me.
Yeah, but you know how that happens? Like, someone comes along and they've done, like, one or two things, and they're like, oh, this is going to be the next guy. And I follow weird things like this, but I remember, like, always kind of being surprised that Stephen Dorff never really. Are you into these, like, pop culture? You're into movies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But
I have a just quick question for the group, because we were talking about Piven was on Ellen's show.
Yep.
What is everyone? You've been reading a lot about what's going on with her, Ellen, and her talk show. I don't know if anyone has any opinions on that.
I heard a little bit, but Eric, what's the key? Set us up here.
No, basically like that her workplace. You know, she acts like she's such a nice person.
Basically, she's a total bitch. Is basically right. What it that
and
seems.
Now they're suing. And apparently really? Working on that show is just a nightmare. It's
they're having like an investigation about like her being a bitch, which is like...
That's weird. Like, it's not like against the law to be a cunt, right?
In LA, they do have the bitch police.
I guess.
It's a whole department of LA.
Like, I don't they're like... First of all, like, she looks really... It's not surprising me that she's mean. Yes. She just kind of looks mean.
100%. Yeah.
And I never really watched that show, and I think it was because of the whole she just was annoying to me, like the dancing, and I think I didn't like the whole idea of like be kind to each other. And she would have celebrities on it. It was that kind of celebrity interview where she would just be like, "Oh, you're so great," you know, and they're like, "Yeah, I am great." so it doesn't surprise me that it's always the thing where like whenever they're trying so hard to convey an image, it's like always the opposite image, you know what I
yeah
mean?
It definitely doesn't surprise me.
Example, but look at Bill Cosby, right? Like that's
exactly
a very extreme example, but right, America's Dad, he would call up Eddie Murphy and be like, don't say the n-word, blah 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 blah, meanwhile drugging and raping women. Like, it's always those people. It's
right. And then like Ice Cube is like a nice family guy. You know what I mean? If you look back at like 1987, like Bill Cosby and Ice Cube, remember how Ice Cube was just thought of as like Ice Cube was just going to murder you if he saw you?
Same with Snoop. Snoop is the same now.
Oh, yeah. He's like a
six kids and it's crazy. I mean, he smokes a lot of weed.
Game shows and stuff.
One thing I will say is it's not surprising. I agree. The Ellen thing, like her being a bitch. And I've heard that in comedy and, you know, from people for a while that she's like difficult to work with and stuff. But what are they actually doing? What is like the something that doesn't make sense to me is like, how can they, I mean, it's a successful show, right? Like, what are they trying to do? Like,
well, they just, it seems like they're just saying it's a difficult place to work and they're not nice there.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, but
it's either Ellen's being a huge bitch or that the people are being too sensitive and they're like, we're going to sue her. We're working.
Yeah. What are they suing?
Like, don't you think, like,
I think war, the company is doing like an investigation, meaning like into the into the work culture,
an
like
internal kind of like, investigation,
kind of like if it's an abusive environment.
Yeah, that's
like,
all nonsense.
And the whole thing, the big thing too, and they kind of were like what people were talking about is that there's a lot of like racism thing, like a lot of
racism.
Like people who work there saying racist comments and it's just so funny. It's really great to see this with Hollywood, how like now you kind of can't get away with being incomplete because that business is just full of shitty people treating you shitty. And now it's funny how like they're kind of not able to get away with it anymore. It's kind of nice to watch that. Like, have you had experience? Cause I know in my experience in this business, I've just dealt with people and I'm like, wow, people are like really mean in this business. Yeah, has that been your experience?
I never to me, but I have several very close friends who are talent agents at big agencies. And I used to go down into their offices all the time and walk freely around. And, you know, I knew a lot of people there. And I cannot tell you how many times I have heard agents like couldn't be meaner to their assistants or interns, like really, really terrible. Like over nothing. And I saw one guy, I will not say who he is, but big music agent, totally stripped down his female intern for literally getting the wrong salad dressing for his salad to the point she was in tears, right? In tears in front of him while he is dressing her down over fucking salad dressing.
Yeah, it's so, and that's thought of as like a rite of passage in that business, right?
Yeah,
like
I guess you're supposed to treat them like shit. There's so many stories about, you know, interns getting shit on forever and assistants and, you know, the same shit in Entourage with the assistant guy. But like, until you see that as like real, it's like terrible. I was like, I can't believe that. And then he laughed. He was literally, she leaves, she's really laughing. Like, haha, look what I did to my assistant.
I mean, what a fucking absolute piece of shit monster.
Absolute piece of
shit. It's just like crazy that those people are just walking around.
Yeah.
Did anyone here ever see that movie Swimming with Sharks?
Yes.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
If you haven't seen it, it's Kevin Spacey is a horrible person, so it's kind of like a documentary. But
well, he is a good actor.
Yeah, but it's like that. It's about what he was talking about.
Yeah, Frank Whaley plays the assistant, and it's very much about how Frank Whaley was very enamored with movies growing up, and he didn't really know anything about showbiz, and he gets this job and he just kind of destroys his life. And then Frank Whaley like takes him hostage, right? At the end, he's going to like, he has him at gunpoint. I think I saw that before I got into like, you know, stand up, and then later I was like, oh yeah, I could see that happening.
Yeah, I've seen it a bunch of times. It's a good, I think it's a good movie. It is kind of true. It's really sad, you know, and it's funny because every year, like Hollywood Reporter puts out their, did like a list of the top 20 like new agents, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at it, and it's like this girl is a new motion picture agent at WME, and it shows her like lineage of who she worked for at the different agencies and how she worked her way up through the training program and all that other bullshit. And I read those all the time, and I'm like, oh my god, this girl went through fucking hell,
yeah,
to get to the, you know, that level of you know, being an agent at a big agency.
So that's why it's kind of nice to watch a little bit of like them being called out for the toxic behavior, or some people being called out for it, because now it's like, oh shit, like you can't just, I mean, I'm sure, you know, it'll still happen and you can get away with it, but like not as much, like now people have an outlet with like social media. Like you can ruin people now with like, it used to just be like, oh yeah, treat them like shit whenever. Now it's like, oh yeah, you can actually, people have found their power on the other end. I remember like when I was in college, I was interested in acting, and I knew this producer guy that went to my college. He'd graduated years before, and he was like, hey, me and another guy wanted to be actors, and he was like, hey, I know this big casting director in LA, and I set up a call with her for you guys to like maybe get advice. And we were like, oh, great, great. And we got on the phone with her. Fucking, you know, the other guy, it was me and him on the call. He was talking more early on, just started screaming at him. And I'm not even kidding, from the beginning of the call throughout the entire call, just yelling at us. Like, and I mean, it was like, I was like, oh my, you know, I was like, this is the business I'm trying to get into. And this was set up by like a friend.
What's wrong with me?
Well, like, like the guy was like, well, so like, what's the difference? Like, you know, in terms of like, you know, film and TV. And she was like, well, what do you mean? You know, the difference between like the film market, TV market, which one? And I swear she was screaming. And I was just like, oh my God, this is going to be, and I remember being like, this is not going to be a good next 20 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people, I don't know, like, I think the part of it too is, you know, people that are at such a top of their career, like an Ellen or an Oprah, like you're always going to have people that you've rubbed the wrong way for whatever reason, mm-hmm. right? So whether it's warranted or not, you know, to get to that level, you have to have a different kind of drive than the average person, right? So I could certainly see that coming off as being a bitch or a cunt or, you know, racist, I think is a little,
yeah, that one's
a little steep. Like, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't watch Ellen religiously, but enough to see that there's, I would be very surprised if that was a backstory to this.
Well, that was basically through. They were saying employees who worked there, not her directly, but the like black people who worked there said like the higher up employees would make comments or very demeaning. So, right.
Well, that I would believe, but that pretty much is.
Anywhere.
Yeah, that's anywhere.
And it's, I guess it is that you know, when you see people like, you know, I'd always hear stories about, like, you're right, about if you get to that level, you've probably had like a drive or, you know, you're probably not nice to everyone. But like, I remember hearing about like James Cameron, people would complain about like, when he, after he made Avatar, they were like, you know, he was really like a bully on set and he would like be really mad. And I was like, well, I mean, you know, he is making Avatar. Like, I'm sure like that's a little stretch. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's kind of a big project to be taken on. So maybe he's not going to be looking out for everyone's feelings on the set of Avatar.
Well, you can say the same thing about Ellen. She has an empire. I get that it's just a talk show, whatever, daytime show. But I mean, think about how successful she has been for how long. I mean, in terms of stand-up comedians that have turned into, you know, mega famous careers, she's up top three, top four, like with the most reach ever. So I'm not condoning.
You don't get that far without stepping on some people.
And also,
The reality is, you know, she is probably on a given shoot day, you know, when they're taping the show, only deals with, I would think, five people. Right.
Right.
So she deals with her EP. She deals with her cost, you know, her wardrobe person, her makeup person, and that, you know, obviously the director, and then maybe like one other person that's, you know, in charge of segments. Fluffers. She's not dealing. She probably has a staff of 200 people, if not 300, that work on that show. She's dealing with a handful. So,
like, yeah, every day she's not going down the line of 300. Like, you fucking asshole.
Well, that's actually the thing that came out, is that one person was picked on every week to get like an earful from Ellen. That was like the earlier.
That was one of the stories.
Which is, that sounds weird, because that seems like she's going into her day like with the idea that she's going to take it out on one person.
Do you also think it's that business? It's very like the climate is very like we were talking about before, where it's thought of as like a rite of passage to like become an assistant. You yell at the assistant, you treat them like shit, you kind of see if they can take it, and then you work your way up. And then it's kind of like, it's like hazing. Like, yeah, now it's like, my turn. So it's kind of like, once you get there, you're like, well, I had to take all this shit to get here. Sure. Now it's my turn. And I don't even think it's like a conscious decision. But once you've made it in that business, that's such a cutthroat, hard business, you're kind of like, probably your attitude is like, look, I'm not going to be, I put up with a lot of shit to get here. I'm not going to be nice to everybody.
I think there's probably some of that. But I also think that that's probably not the norm across the board. You know, I mean,
you think so?
I spent a lot of time on big movie sets and at the studios and in agencies and in productions. And I can't say that outside of a couple of instances, like the one I mentioned, I've really ever seen people outwardly taking advantage of people beneath them for sport.
So you've never really experienced anything, or anyone else? Have you experienced something where, like, you got in a situation like that, met someone really powerful or someone famous, and there was some kind of treatment that was, you know, I don't know, just super negative, abusive. I have, but yeah.
I mean, abusive.
Or just like where you're like, whoa, dude, come on, like relax. Like, what are you, why are you so mad at me? I mean, I've met like big comedians where I'm like, wow, you seem really angry at me.
At you?
Yeah, I had a bad thing with Janine Garofalo once. She was really mad at me.
She wasn't abusive, right? I mean, we talked.
I mean, she was just very mean to me, and you could say abusive. I don't know. Yeah, like she was just very rude.
She follow you to the men's room, just beat the shit out of you.
Yeah.
This isn't even the woman's room. Stop hitting
me. I mean, I had I was hired to write a script for this woman. Talent agent here in New York, and I wrote the script, you know, and went back and forth with her for like a year on this project with my writing partner, and completed it, and we had a locked up deal on paper, contract, right? And it's really the only time I truly ever got like, well, the other time I did too, but this was a true fucking, that she decided after we wrote the script to what she wanted, that she wanted to work with a different writer who is a friend of hers after we did all the work, and basically said, I'm not working with you guys anymore. I'm going to work with this person because I don't like your script. And we're like, what? That didn't make any sense. And, you know, we had an agent at the time, and he was like, she is totally breaching the contract, but you're kind of fucked because what are you going to do? Like, all you can do is either sue her now, right?
Try Janine Garofalo?
It was Janine Garofalo. Or you could do what I've chosen to do, which is let her continue down this path, which has been a long time now, and I'm sure it's going nowhere, but she would constantly post updates like, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I would send her a note and be like, I'm just letting you know that the second you go into production, I'm letting the production company know that there's a claim out there on this script. Right. Wow. So you guys know that if you go to get production insurance, if there's anything like that, you can't get it and you can't raise money. So right. I basically trolled her for the last 6 years.
And then we blew up her house. No.
We didn't blow anyone's house up.
Right, you're right. We paid those guys.
yeah, that's true. That's true. Good save.
Yeah.
I had to plug in my computer. I was about to die, so.
Oh, shit. Mine's going to die soon.
Well, I mean, we are pretty much at our hour. I mean, I also selfishly have to eat dinner.
I do want to say, I just want to address this one elephant in the room with Alex, that
Jesus,
you... Your bed is incredibly neat.
Yeah, do you make it?
I made it. Yeah, I did.
It's a fake background. It's a virtual background.
Yeah. Let me see if I could. Hold on. Let me get the light on in here.
Well, what's amazing is like me and Eric have been to his apartment a lot, and like that's not the bed you would imagine.
It's
would be.
Oh, by the way, he's got some very
mom now, right?
Very cute daisies in the corner. By the way, also
sunflowers.
Sunflowers.
That's why he moved up from the basement.
Those are sunflowers. Obviously.
I'm just impressed because...
Well, that is my mom's doing, but the bed is all my doing. I make the bed every day.
Good. It looks like a hotel, like when you come back after you go to the pool.
Well, thank
you. You in the army? Like, those are...
Yeah.
I am... No, I'm a police officer. No, I'm kidding. I don't
those
know.
Those are good tucks. Like, you can come over and
look
make
at my bed.
What's going on with your bed? Well, I mean, that's a problem.
Correct. That's a problem.
I'm saying your beds in your room in general is very depressing, Tom.
my bed?
Yes.
Oh, what does that mean exactly? It's depressing?
Yeah, it looks like a depressed man lives in that room. I don't know. I'm
healthy. Okay, well, that's probably because I live here. So
I'm sorry, dude.
I actually am roommates with the lead singer of Radiohead.
Oh, really? Tom York?
Yeah, so that's his bed.
He's very depressed.
Wow, that's awesome.
It makes sense. I could see Tom living in that room.
I used to have a joke about how come no one ever lives next door to a really good band, you know, because when there's always like someone lives next door to a band that practices and they're too loud, it's always like a shitty band. Like, imagine if you lived next door to like Radiohead when they were practicing. You're like, wow, can you guys turn this up?
That's good.
Genius. All right. Well, you know, thanks a lot for doing this, you guys.
You guys,
Mangina Dialogues, and you guys have had some really good guests recently, right? I've been seeing.
Who have
you had recently?
Yeah, who could people listen to?
Oh wow, this week we have Jay Moore.
Yeah, that's the one I saw. Do you guys know him, or had he been on before?
No, we've
He's
done.
My dad.
Oh wow, okay, that's there you go. Dad. Oh wow, oh that's so cool.
He could be. Yeah. He actually could be Scope's father. He could.
Nick, are you like in your 20s?
Did you get him to do impressions?
Wait, say that again.
I'm sorry. Did you get him to do impressions?
No, actually, I think he did a little walk-in. He might have did.
Okay. Oh, his walk-in is perfect.
He did a fairy cat.
That was
right on.
Oh, that's
Jay's like 50. He's 50, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 50. Like this.
Yeah,
this
I'm 32, month. So he would have had to have me young. But yeah, he could be my dad.
It's possible. Yeah, Jay Moore could be my dad. I'm 28.
Yeah, so Jay was awesome. We've done a bunch of stuff with the Comedy Dynamics people.
Oh, cool.
And we actually, it's not going to come out this week. It's probably going to come out next week, the week after, rather, with Brian Volkweis, the president.
Oh yeah, the founder.
They're the ones that distributed my movie.
Yeah, they're awesome. He's phenomenal. So that was an awesome one for us, just to talk to someone like him. We had
Barry Katz. Barry Katz was a big one.
Yeah, Barry was ridiculous.
Larry, do you guys know him, or how do you get it through your publicist, or what do you? Because you guys have consistently good guests.
I have a long history in entertainment and in music, so I just tap a lot of the publicists that I know or people that I've met directly. You know, I'm in LA. I used to be in LA a lot, so I was at the Comedy Store a lot. Mm. I would just, you know, chat up people and really just a lot of social media networking for the most part. But
Comedy Dynamics
came through a publicist, which is how we built that relationship. And they just feed us all the people that they have specials coming out with.
Did you do stuff with them or in the past?
No, it just all materialized through a publicist who I know.
Oh, okay. I should hit them up because I know those guys.
Yeah, you should. You should. They I mean, they're the giant on the street right now as far as putting out comedy stuff, and they're on the new Peacock network. They have a thing out there, so it's really awesome. They're killing it.
All right. Well, that's great. So that's everyone, great, check it out. Yeah, Mangina Dialogues.
And thanks again for doing it, and also having us on. I mean, we really had a good. I know. I'll speak for myself. I had a great time on the podcast. It's a great podcast for anyone listening that hasn't heard of Mangina Dialogues. You should definitely go check them out. Give them a
story. Historic Media Podcast Network.
Yes.
Yeah, bringing it home.
Do you guys do you guys do video still? Yeah, you're doing the video with the Zoom, right?
Yeah, if we're doing Zoom, we'll record it and put it out on our YouTube channel.
That's good. Yeah, so check them out on YouTube too. Get those numbers.
There's a lot. Yeah, that's network's getting a lot of good people. Alice Cooper has a show. And
oh yeah,
yeah.
The guy Vincent Pastore. We're all
our boy Adam Glenn, who's like a celebrity interviewer. He's like buddies with Shaq.
I can't wait for the Christmas party.
Yeah, right.
Is there Christmas this year, or is Christmas off?
I don't know. Probably not.
We'll have a Christmas party out here. But you guys should come out if you ever want to come out to Connecticut and do some shows. As progressive.
You want to take a ride up there?
I'll be there tomorrow.
That would be great. I miss comedy.
I'm not booked. All right. So thanks again, Greg Alperin and Nick Scopes.
Yeah, great job, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Right,
guys. Thanks, man. Good time. Take
care. All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
So a dope rhyme.
I make you laugh so hard, I give you an angina. Making more dough than director Rob Reiner. If you heckle me, I give your ass a shiner. Then diss you with a dope ass one liner. On the microphone, I kill at will. I make laughter spill because I'm ill for real. Jail, my jokes are sick like Lyme disease from a tick. And at every show, I bang the hottest chick. I'm getting more ass than Brad fucking Pitt. I'm a comedy legend like that movie Vacation. One time I got a